How many churches are there in Des Moines? How many mosques, temples, or other spaces of worship? You may be surprised by the answers. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. This hour, a new book showcases the religious diversity of Iowa, in particular, Des Moines. I'll talk with Tim Knepper and Bob Blanchard, the editor and photographer behind A Spectrum of Faith, World Religions in America's Heartland. But this book involved the work of many others as well. In fact, it was put together by more than 100 students at Drake University. I'll talk with Carol Spalding Cruzy, who oversaw that process, and John Noble, a student who was embedded at a local mosque. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. When people move from one part of the world to another, they bring important things with them: their cultural identity, the food they know and love, and of course, their religious beliefs. This hour, we'll talk about a new book that showcases the religious diversity of Iowa, in particular, Des Moines, a book that was a group project of more than 100 students at Drake University. We'll talk with some of the students involved in the project a little bit later on this hour, but we're going to start with two of the men behind the project. It's called A Spectrum of Faith, World Religions in America's Heartland. And Tim Knepper is here with me. He is the editor of the project. He is also professor of philosophy and department chair at Drake University. Hello, Tim.
Hi, Charity.
Welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Wonderful to be back.
Bob Blanchard is also here. He is the photographer behind this project. He's a freelance photographer based in Des Moines. Hello, Bob.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. And Tim, first of all, we've talked about this project in the past, at least the seeds of this project in the past on this program. But take us back in time. How did this idea get started?
It started with an op-ed in the Des Moines Register. We had students at a Vietnamese temple on Southwest 9th Street. They were working with practitioners there to create digital stories to show their personally meaningful experiences and practices. And that's when I learned that this temple was having a 40-foot statue of a Buddhist bodhisattva shipped from Vietnam and installed. I thought that was really cool. And I wrote an op-ed in the Register inviting people to come out to the dedication ceremony.
And that is where Bob got involved too, right, Bob? You saw that op-ed.
I did read the op-ed. I had just literally moved to Des Moines 2 weeks before. I was still unpacking my moving boxes when I read the article. And went down the next day and photographed for over 3 hours. And while editing photos, totally out of the box for me, I emailed Tim asking if he could introduce me to others that I might be able to photograph while I was here over the next couple years. He said he had a better idea. He'd been trying to write a book but couldn't fill up the pages with words, and was I interested in a collaboration?
Well, and so this collaboration started with the two of you, but it grew well beyond that. Tim, we'll talk more about the process in a little while, but just give me a thumbnail sketch of how big this project became.
Well, over 100 students, we think, got involved, dozens of Drake faculty and staff, of course, the 15 religious communities that are featured in the book, and many, many, many members from each of those communities. Community partners as well, especially with the Des Moines Area Religious Council, which is the beneficiary of the sale of the book.
Now, both of you in writing in the book and in conversations have expressed how surprised you were when you really discovered the religious diversity of Des Moines, of central Iowa. Tim, why was that such a surprise for you?
I spent many years in Boston. My wife dragged me out here because she wanted to go to the writer's workshop out there in Iowa City. And I was, I was astounded in Iowa City and even more so upon moving to Des Moines. It's like the more I looked for it, the more I found religious and cultural diversity. I continue to be surprised.
But You know, in Boston, religious and cultural diversity is not surprising. It's a fact of everyday life for people who've lived in Des Moines their whole life. That's a fact of everyday life. Why do you think it was so surprising to you to find it here?
I think it's the stereotypes that East Coasters have about the Midwest, that it's flat in all ways.
How about you, Bob?
Well, I came from the Rocky Mountains, and it was a total surprise to me. When all my friends learned where I was going, they asked, first of all, why? And second of all, just to confirm that I really was coming here. And then they proceeded to tell me everything that was cool about Des Moines. Nobody ever mentioned the fact that there was diversity. And it was really about it was a huge surprise for me to get here and just realize the cultural diversity, first of all. But often, you know, that's manifested by the religious communities as well that they bring from their homeland.
Well, and where there is cultural diversity, there is religious diversity. So again, I mean, Tim, when you started learning about, oh, there are lots of people from different cultures who've come together in this city, even though it's in the middle of the country, were you then surprised to find these places of worship?
No, the more I learned about the history of Iowa in welcoming refugees and immigrants and learning about the places around the world from which they had come, the more I just came to expect what kind of religious diversity I would find in each case.
The places of worship that you selected for this book, I mean, one of the real joys of the book is that it takes the reader behind closed doors. You know, many of us pass these places of worship, and if it's not part of our faith life, we don't feel like we should or could enter those doors out of curiosity. That seems a little bit rude. But you really give us an opportunity to get a glimpse of what's going on in these other kinds of places of worship that we may not be familiar with. How did you select the places you would go to? Because you had many, many choices.
Yeah, that was torturous. That was the most difficult part of the project, was limiting it to only 15 communities. We made a decision around the middle of the project that because there are three main branches of Christianity and three main branches of Judaism, that three would be the upper limit for any one of the religions that was featured in the book. And we were glad that we could feature at least two communities for every religion that was featured in the book as well. We joke in the foreword that this is only volume one, God willing, inshallah in Arabic.
And that is a joke that you think this is.
Who knows?
All right. So as you selected the places of worship, again, you had many choices. How did you pick the individual places that you would go to?
Yeah, in some cases, these are communities that I had long and close relationships with. The Vietnamese Buddhist temple on Southwest 9th. I'd been there many years before, taking students there. The Bosnian mosque. I have many friends at the Bosnian mosque up by Merle Hay Mall, and had been taking students to the Hindu temple up in Madrid for a while. The Sikh temples too. We've spent a lot of time with my family in the Sikh temples. You know, the hardest choice was Protestant Christianity, you know, because, well, I mean, there are only three or four in Des Moines. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. So many. And we decided, because of the focus on refugees, immigrants, and minority communities, we decided to feature the oldest African-American church in Iowa, which is Burns United Methodist.
When you made your list, when you winnowed it down to the places that you would feature in the book, at what point did your students get involved?
That story brings us to the woman sitting across from me in the booth here, Carol Spalding Cruzy. It just so happened, there are a lot of serendipitous coincidences, if that's not... A lot of happy coincidences that happened along the way for the book. And one of them, you know, not just the op-ed, but another one is that I think the semester after that, I had a a service writing student working for me with the Comparison Project, which is a program that I run at Drake in comparative and lived religion. And she found out about what Bob and I were doing, and she told the student with whom she was taking the class or internship. And that teacher is Carol Spaulding Cruzy, who runs a community press. So Carol invited us to apply and be her next project. Then it was no longer me doing the writing, and that was a good thing. It was now students doing the writing, students doing the planning and the grant writing, the editing, the research, the graphic design and layout, the marketing, and everything.
And Carol, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Charity.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
In taking on this project, then, you would be overseeing this giant team of students?
In a manner of speaking, I'm the founder and the executive director of the Drake Community Press, but really it is, it emphasizes the concept of community. So I'm sort of the manager of all of the various moving parts. And as Tim described, that includes students in various courses that contribute to the planning, the production, the promotion, the design of this book across several disciplines, all within the Drake University curriculum. And then working with our various community partners, we always have a beneficiary partner. In this case, as Tim mentioned, the Des Moines Area Religious Council, which is the partner that both works with us to produce the book, along with the Comparison Project, but that also receives the funding from sales of the book. So we like to support the work of nonprofits in the community through the press model.
Well, and when you say we always do this, this is still a fairly new project for you.
It is. This is technically our third publication. The press did a prototype book in 2011 called Zachary's Bridge, Children's Journeys from Around the World to Iowa. And I was on this program, actually,
yes,
in 2011 with my co-author, Kay Fenton Smith, to talk about that book. And that was a prototype in the sense that we didn't use, we just used a handful of Drake University students and not, cross-curriculum. And I just wanted to see if we could do it. And then after we actually were able to produce that volume, we then launched the press in 2014 with another book that I came on the show to talk about called The Ones I Bring With Me, Los Que Llevo Conmigo. And our partner, our nonprofit partner there was the Latina mentoring organization called Al Éxito. So this is our third and by far, I think, our most beautiful volume. And it's been an amazing, wonderful 2 years in working with both the Comparison Project, the talent that I have been so fortunate to work with Bob Blanchard, our photographer, and the many, many talented students that have been involved in the project, too.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about the new book, A Spectrum of Faith, World Religions in America's Heartland. It showcases the diversity of religions in Des Moines, in central Iowa. With me, Carol Spaulding Cruzy. She's professor of English and director of the Drake Community Press. Bob Blanchard is here. He's the photographer behind this book. And Tim Knepper is also here, professor of philosophy and department chair at Drake University and the editor of this book. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about a new book that really showcases the religious diversity of Des Moines and central Iowa. The book is called A Spectrum of Faith, World Religions in America's Heartland. It was a group project that involved more than 100 students at Drake University. It's published by Drake Community Press. And with me right now, Tim Knepper. He is the editor of the book. He's also a professor of philosophy and department chair at Drake University. Bob Blanchard is here. He is the photographer for this book, and Carol Spaulding Cruzy. She is director of the Drake Community Press and professor of English at Drake University. And Tim, in the end, when you chose the different faith communities that you would be featuring in the book, you ended up also assigning a student to each one of those communities. Tell me about that process.
That's correct. That was a wonderful experience. Carol and I co-taught this course together. We had 15 religion majors, each of whom was immersed in a community for a semester. And we also had 9 English students who worked as developmental editors and were assigned researchers to help develop their writing and find themes across field reports and so forth.
So how did you choose what student would go where?
Those things always work out strangely. I had them put on a piece of paper their first, second, and third choices. And in every case, we were able to give a student a first or second choice. They were all happy.
And give me an idea of the diversity or maybe lack of diversity in your class. I mean, did people bring their own ideas of faith and were looking for a similar faith community? Were they looking for something new? Give me an idea of how that worked.
I think in every case, students, if they were themselves religious, they chose a community that was a different religion than the one they practiced. We had some students who were taking Hebrew and interested in working with Jewish communities. Many students were interested in working with the mosque. And we've had some students who were more interested in Asian traditions and wanted to be assigned to Buddhist, Hindu, or Sikh communities.
So it was mostly what they were interested in. And give me an idea, to be in this class, were they upperclassmen or students from any year?
We had a number of juniors and seniors, religion majors. That was fortunate. We had a large crop of students that year. And then there were some students who had just come back from a trip to India with me, who I knew were excellent students because of that experience, and they wanted to work with some of the Sikh and Hindu communities.
Carol, how did the English students get involved in this process?
I think that we simply put out a call for students who wanted to be involved in editing and production of the book. And quite honestly, I did not seek students who were particularly or necessarily interested in the topic of religions. Because what you'll find with students who want to be involved in the making of books, it doesn't necessarily matter what the topic is to them. They just want to be part of that, you know, that whole process.
Right. It's a tremendous opportunity
for
a student.
It is. And they loved it. However, I will tell you that they did talk about how much they learned from, helping with the editing and helping the researching students on this project. And so I think they did benefit from both what the content of the book is about, as well as from the practical experience that they gained from working on this project.
Well, I want to bring one of the students into the conversation now. John Noble is a student who worked on the book, who worked on writing one of the sections. Hello, John.
Hi, Charity. Good to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Tell me about the community that you visited.
Yeah, so I was embedded for the study period with Masjid An-Nur, which is right on the corner of 42nd and University in Des Moines. It's not too far from Drake. It's a Muslim mosque, and I had the opportunity to work with this mosque. Once a week, I would go, usually on Friday, but occasionally on other days of the week. And I would go, and I would basically just sit in and get to learn a little bit about this community, which is very diverse. It's a largely immigrant community, but there's even diversity in that. So it was definitely an interesting experience.
And why, this was one of your first or second choices, why did you request to go to a local mosque?
I don't know if I remember exactly, but I know that, so my area of study in the Drake Religion Department focused very heavily on Christianity, on Christian social ethics, on Christian questions of morality. So I think probably one of the reasons I chose it was pretty far outside of my comfort zone. I had a sort of baseline knowledge of Islam. I had taken one class. I had studied. I probably knew the basics, although I think maybe this experience even revealed to me that I may not have known as many of the basics as I thought I did. But it was a little bit out of my comfort zone, and it gave me an opportunity to learn more in an academic sense and to be pushed outside that comfort zone in a personal sense as well.
And John, did you need to make the contact with the mosque and explain this project, or was that something that had already been done?
I think the initial contact had already been made, if I'm remembering correctly. And it was one that Dr. Knepper knew and had made some contact with before. But the first time I went to visit, I was going on my own. I went by myself, and I went and visited, and I just sort of walked in the door, left my shoes on, which was mistake number one. And then, so that was quite the kind of quick awakening to the policies and the rules. But learned very quickly and was just really thrown in head first in a sort of exciting way to something that was very new to me.
Now, you said this was a little bit outside your comfort zone, but I can imagine, especially given today's political climate, and I realize that this happened a while back, but still, there has been a growing rift in our country between Christians and Muslims, at least rhetorically speaking. So I can imagine it might be a little bit outside the comfort zone of worshipers at a mosque to have a college student come in just to see what's going on. So how did you try to make sure that people were comfortable with your presence?
I mean, I think the biggest thing for me was asking leadership of the mosque and everyday worshipers who were there, just being honest and recognizing, treating it sort of like I was, as a researcher, I was a guest in their religious home, basically. So when you enter someone's home, you ask, you know, I mean, and in reality, sometimes in my family homes, I ask, do you take your shoes off? So I asked questions. I said, you know, what do I do? What do I not do? Am I allowed to take notes? Can I sit here? Can I sit there? And I found that just like being welcomed into someone else's home, those rules were explained, and that those rules were explained compassionately and with the desire of building relationships. And I found that to be really powerful, in that these individuals in this mosque, both the leadership and the everyday worshipers, who range from people who live in the neighborhood to Drake students to people who have been here for decades to people who have been at this mosque for weeks, wanted to build that relationship and wanted me, both as an individual and a researcher, to learn more about Islam and about their community. And I think that was really one of the fruits of this book that I really was impacted by.
Now, you mentioned talking to the imams who are at the mosque, the religious leaders who are at the mosque. Did you also try to connect with members of the congregation?
Yeah, I think that was a really important, it was a really important work that we did as part of this project. Because, you know, we wanted to speak with the religious leaders, but so much of this book revolved around what is the everyday lived experience of a Sikh or of a Jew or of a Catholic or of a Hindu in Iowa, in the heartland. So I think it was so important for me to connect with everyday worshipers who, you know, we talk about religious neighbors a lot in the course of this project, who I quickly found out, because I live in the Drake neighborhood, were my actual neighbors, were people who I saw at Hy-Vee, and were people who I saw out walking their dogs and who saw me out walking. And so I think that there was a real desire that was part of the project that I'm hoping I lived out in my research, which was to connect with everyday people in their everyday lived experience. And I think sometimes the academic study of religion, we don't get that as much. So seeing that was really powerful and sort of helped me learn more about Islam and about my community.
How long did you spend visiting the mosque? How many weeks?
I sort of aspirationally made it there once a week. I don't know if that completely happened all the time, but the goal was once a week for a semester. So it was several months. It was enough time, I think, to get to know people and for people to get used to Oh, he's the one who sits in the corner while we pray and takes notes.
Well, and Bob, as the photographer on this project, where did you come in? Because you also, you had to be comfortable, people had to be comfortable with you in all of these different places of worship. Did you connect with the student or did you go in on your own?
Actually, Professor Knepper provided the initial connections for me. But after that, I was kind of on my own, and I would go in and basically just participate, except that I participated in the service with this camera in front of my face. But, you know, they were extremely welcoming. As John mentioned, it was really their aspiration to teach people about their religion and how they fit into the community of Des Moines. So I found them all to be extremely welcoming. It was very limited when we were not able to actually photograph during prayer services. There was only a couple of instances. One in particular was actually the Tifereth Israel Synagogue. We weren't allowed to photograph during Shabbat services, but they said come back in 3 days, and they had 30 congregation members that literally recreated the religious service so we could photograph.
Interesting. And they didn't want you there during the Shabbat service because of the they didn't want technology involved in that service. Was that the reason?
No, it's do you know the reason? It was actually, they said if we allowed one person to take photos, everyone would be taking photos. So it was just the kind of policy of theirs that no one could take photos during their services.
But I can't believe that they recreated the service for you, and that many individuals were willing to be involved in that.
Yeah, it was pretty cool and kind of blew me away. But Anna Steenson, who you're going to talk to in a few minutes, the videographer, she was there as well. So if you watch the video that's associated with this book, you'll actually see the recreation of some of the Shabbat service.
Interesting. And Tim, from your perspective, and I don't mean this in a way that would cast any aspersions on any, but were there communities that were more concerned about allowing students and a photographer to come in or more worried about what this might mean for them than others?
Not really. They wanted to be able to see the writing in the end and see the photos in the end and approve of that. And that was just policy for us. And there were some restrictions about what could be photographed and not in a few cases. The Hindu temple up in Madrid doesn't allow photography inside the sanctuary. And then there was the case that Bob mentioned at Tifereth. But no, in general, the communities were very welcoming to Bob, to Anna, to the students, to me, and very much wanted to be part of the book and have their stories told and have others learn about them.
John, before I let you go, how do you think this experience changed you?
Yeah, I think that this experience was a powerful one in a number of senses for me. One of the things that I think this experience did was it taught me a lot about building relationships across lines of religious or non-religious difference. And I think that's a skill that the Comparison Project has brought to Drake and to the broader Des Moines community. And I think this project really exemplifies the work that the Comparison Project has hoped to do around that. And especially one of the things that I think I noticed with Masjid An-Nur was allowing people to tell their own story about what their ultimate truth and what their faith means to them, you know, especially in a situation in Des Moines. I heard from several people at the mosque that they'd been subject to, you know, people who didn't understand Islam and Islamophobic remarks and, you know, anger and pain that was going on. Giving people the opportunity to tell their story and about their faith and about their ultimate truth, I think is a really powerful way for us to open up relationship with one another that leads to a more rich society and leads to really a lot of healthy and strong and powerful lasting relationships.
Do you feel like it impacted you spiritually, personally?
Yeah, I think that there is so much power as a person of faith myself, to see other people, like I said, speak their ultimate truth, to see them work in their own community. I think sometimes in this sort of work, and I certainly had this tendency, I had this tendency to say, well, isn't it amazing that we're all so much alike when we all strip it all away and we're all really just the same? And I think that this project really flipped that on its head. And it said, no, we're not all the same. There's deep religious diversity here in Des Moines and in our communities. And that's where the power is. And that's where the beauty is. And that's where strong relationships are built. Not in this idea that we're all really the same, but in that we are a people of deep diversity, a people of deep complexity, and that we can build lasting relationships, not in spite of that, but because of that.
Well, John Noble, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yeah, thank you.
John Noble is a student who wrote one of the chapters in the book. He was embedded at a mosque in Des Moines, and many other students were embedded in different religious communities. And Tim, when we come back, we're going to have to take a break here in just a moment. But one of your other students who was embedded at a local mosque ended up having a profound spiritual experience, didn't he?
That's correct. Maybe you're referring here to a young woman who was at Tiferet Israel Synagogue.
No, I don't think I was, but we can talk about that when we get back. There was a young man who participated in Ramadan and fasted with the people at the mosque in the chapter that he wrote. But we'll talk more about that when we get back in just a moment. We are talking about the new book, A Spectrum of Faith, World Religions in America's Heartland. With me, Tim Knepper. He is the editor of the book. He's also professor of philosophy and department chair at Drake University. Bob Blanchard is the photographer behind this book. And Carol Spalding-Cruzy is also still with us. She's a professor of English and director of the Drake Community Press. This was a group project. More than 100 students ended up working on this project. We'd also love for you to participate in this conversation. You can give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the new book, A Spectrum of Faith, World Religions in America's Heartland. It showcases the religious diversity in Des Moines and in central Iowa. We'd love to hear from you as well. If you are part of one of these communities that we've been talking about today, or maybe you've been surprised as well by the religious diversity in Iowa, or had a spiritual encounter with a religion that you were not familiar with. We'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Tim Knepper. He's the editor of this collection. He's also a professor of philosophy and department chair at Drake University. His students went out and were embedded in these different religious communities and wrote the chapters along with English students at Drake University. Carol Spalding-Cruzy is here. She's a professor of English and director of the Drake Community Press, which published this book. And Bob Blanchard is also with us. He's a photographer and took the pictures that are featured throughout this book, which is really a stunningly beautiful book. And Tim, just before the break, as I mentioned, we had talked to John Noble, who was embedded at one of the local mosques. And there was another student, Matthew Beck, who also chose Islam as the religion that he wanted to learn more about. Okay. And just reading his chapter, it struck me that he really did have a profound spiritual experience. Can you tell me more about his experience?
Indeed. Yeah, Matthew did. So many students did, so I confused who you were speaking about. Matt had never been to a mosque before. Matt actually was not a religion major, but a law, politics, and society major. And he was assigned to a Bosnian mosque up by the Merle Hay Mall. We have three Bosnian mosques in Des Moines. And this is a community that I'm very close with. This is also a community, many members of which come from the Srebrenica area and have family members who were victims of the Srebrenica genocide in 1995. So the experience was profound for Matt in many ways. He writes, I think, about firecrackers going off and some of the men taking cover under the table because they were afraid they were being shot at. And Matt also chose to fast with them during Ramadan, abstaining not only from food but also from water and drink during the daylight hours. So yes, very many profound and enriching experiences for Matt at the mosque.
Have you talked to your students after the fact? I realize that getting the book put together and writing these passages, not all of the students were writers to begin with. So Carol, I know that that was a big part of the process as well. Have you had an opportunity to talk to them about the lasting impact of this experience, Tim?
Yeah. Yes, we had some celebratory events over the last year. As you know, Krista Tippett was at Drake, and we coordinated a religious and multicultural fair featuring these communities as part of that. And then we had the book launch in April, at which Eboo Patel came and was the keynote speaker. And the students were all there, and oh, so proud of the book now that it was out. Meeting their parents, who were oh so proud as well, was one of the real joys for me of the book launch.
And you mentioned before that other students had really profound spiritual experiences. Can you share another story with us?
There's a young woman, Shay, who was chose to go to the Conservative Synagogue Tiferet. She, see if I can get this right, she's a Persian origin, so she has some Muslim roots. But her father, I believe, is Catholic, and her mother is Jewish. And they didn't really practice anything. But as a result of Shay's experiences in the synagogue, they've started now practicing, observing some Jewish rites and festivals at home.
So it's actually impacted the entire family.
The entire family, yes.
Very interesting. Well, I want to bring another person into the conversation here, and you mentioned her earlier. Anna Steenson documented this project. Anna, hello.
Hello.
Hi. And so you put together about a 15-minute documentary about the project, also including interviews with some of the faith leaders in Des Moines, and also some footage of some of these inside some of these places of worship. Anna, how did you get involved?
Yeah, so I was approached about when the project was kind of starting about 2 years ago by Tim Knepper, and he explained to me what the project was about, and he's like, would you like to document this? And I've lived in Des Moines all my life. I've been aware of some of the diversity around me, but I was really excited to get to learn more about the city that I've been living in. And so I automatically said, yeah, I definitely want to do this. And then from then on, I got involved with Bob Blanchard, and I followed him around to the religious communities. As he was photographing, I was filming him doing that and also filming the communities. And then my connections just grew and grew from there, and it was a very impactful experience.
Well, in your documentary, it's available on YouTube for people who'd like to see it. You're documenting this project and also profiling these communities. Did you have both of those stories are such important stories to tell, interesting stories to tell. Did you have a hard time deciding what you wanted to bring to people?
Definitely. There is so much to tell about this entire project and so many different ways the documentary could have gone. I had over 30 hours of footage to sort through and interviews and stuff like that. So making it 15 minutes was definitely a challenge. But I decided to make sure each portion of the people involved in the project got their own story to tell. So the religious leaders, the students, the professors, the community members, DMARC, and they all got a little piece of the whole entire project to paint an overall view of what it was like to publish this book and how it impacted the community.
And I want to play just a moment from the documentary. This is a cut of Pastor Angela Lewis from Burns United Methodist Church in Des Moines.
One of my favorite passages is in Revelation. And when John says, I looked out and I saw a whole group of people that no one could number. And he said, and then he begins to say they were from every tribe every language, every tongue, every whatever, every background. It reminds me of a glimpse of heaven.
All right, just a small moment from the documentary, A Spectrum of Faith. Anna, what do you want people to take away from seeing your documentary?
I think my goal with the people seeing the documentary is probably similar to Bob's with his photos, is just to see those lived practices, see the people engaging in their religious ceremonies and seeing their faith being lived out. That's something that you can read about, and that's great to read about and study and learn. But when you see it, it all kind of comes together, and it makes a connection. At least it did for me when I was there filming it. And seeing that these people have lives, and they're very similar to you, but still have this religious diversity to them, I think that's something that can really change people's outlooks towards people who might be a little bit different than them.
How do you think this project changed you?
Yeah, so every time I left one of these communities after I was finishing up with a film shoot, I felt very uplifted, and I felt like I was a part of their community. I felt like I could go back and visit with them and be in their community again and go through traditions with them, and I felt very at home at these places. And there was such a wider range of the different religions, but at each place I felt at home, and that was something that I didn't necessarily expect, but I was certainly glad that that's how I was able to be affected by the entire project.
Anna, thank you so much for talking with us.
Yeah, thank you.
Anna Steenson is the documentarian for the project. You can see her documentary, A Spectrum of Faith, on YouTube. And Bob, I mean, since you and Anna work together, you were often taking pictures, video at the same place. I'd love to hear your thoughts about what you got out of this experience.
It was really profound for me. First of all, I wasn't familiar with many of the cultures, and I definitely wasn't familiar with the religions. I grew up in a Christian household, but I don't practice. And it was always kind of a joke when I would talk to people that I went to church more in the last 2.5 years than I probably had in my previous 45. But spiritually, culturally, I think this project was really life-changing for me, just from, if nothing more than an educational perspective, and just to realize how rich and vibrant diversity makes a community like Des Moines, and I think it's true in every community we could visit.
We had a caller on the line who couldn't stay on, and his question was one that I think actually a lot of Americans who are not familiar with diverse religious communities do ask. And his question was, what's the difference between Sikhs and Muslims? And I can imagine that Tim, as a professor of philosophy working with religion majors, I mean, this is a something that you probably have to introduce to many students.
Yes, indeed.
And you visited one of the Sikh communities in Iowa. Tell us a little bit about the Sikh community.
We have two Sikh communities now, one in West Des Moines and one in Johnston. Sikhism is an Indian religion that does have its roots at a time when Muslim Mughal Empire is ruling much of India. So there are, it's definitely its own distinct religion, but there are some elements of Islam in it, one holy book, one God, and there are some elements of Hinduism in it as well, particularly reincarnation.
And being a Sikh is it's very important. One of the elements of Sikhism is, or there are five different elements that involve really your personal appearance, which can make it very easy to identify a Sikh when you see them. Tell me more about that.
Yes, Sikhs do not cut their hair, and male Sikhs will wear a turban. This is a practice that they adopt in the late 1700s, and it is, at the time they say, so a Sikh will never cower in anonymity, that a male Sikh will always stand out and therefore be called on to speak for their religion, to speak for their faith, to defend their faith if necessary. So the tragedy in America is that many, or some anyway, Sikhs have been misidentified as Muslims and then been the victim of Islamophobic acts of violence.
And when the student went to visit the Sikh community, was that something that they explored? Maybe a fear of being discriminated against on the basis of their appearance, which is a fundamental part of their religion.
It's there. They're also a very proud community, and they've been rooted in Des Moines for a while now. So with some of these members, I'm thinking particularly of a young man, J.J. Singh Kaur. He has started a group called the Iowa Sikh Turbinators. Not Terminators, Turbinators. And they are a Sikh group that reaches out to other religious communities to establish dialogue, to seek understanding, and to work for the greater social good. So, you know, so the Sikhs are not cowering in anonymity. They have stepped up and are at the forefront of interfaith work in central Iowa.
I think, as you mentioned, I mean, there have been some really terrible hate crimes perpetrated against the Sikh community, and one that hit very close to home, of course, was in 2012. There was a massacre at a Sikh temple in mm-hmm. Wisconsin. I want to ask you quickly before we run out of time here. All of these religious communities that you visited were in Des Moines, except for the one in Madrid. So why did you decide to go to the Hindu temple in Madrid?
Well, it's the only Hindu temple around. We thought for a while that we would only have one chapter on Hinduism, that Hindu temple up there. One of the many delights for me, and actually Bob made this introduction for me, I was learning about the Bhutanese Hindus who are here in Des Moines and hold a bhajan, a singing and dancing service, every Saturday night in one of their basements, usually around Easter Lake. And that is so much fun to go attend. You'll get dragged out and be dancing with them and then eating food at the end. But they own some plots on East Army Post and are raising money to build a cultural center and a temple.
This book, as I mentioned, it takes us behind doors that we normally see as closed. It gives us an opportunity to visit other faith communities that we are not a part of and learn about these other communities. I suspect it will play almost a role as a textbook in many of your classes. Tim, what are your hopes for this book? What do you want people to take away from it?
So much, but for me, as directing the Comparison Project and thinking about interfaith understanding and engagement in Des Moines, the book is not only an end, but it's a means to other ends. It's a means to other interfaith ends. We've started a Meet My Religious Neighbor open house series, beginning with the mosque that John was embedded in, Masjid An-Nur, always the first weekend of the month. Masjid An-Nur hosted in May, and we saw about 150 people come in during the three-hour period to visit that mosque and learn how religion is practiced there and meet the community. We're also working our way toward an interfaith youth camp this summer using digital storytelling methodology as a way to share faith and focusing on the 15 religions from the book.
And this summer?
Yes, in August.
All right. Well, we are out of time, but Tim Knepper, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks, Charity.
Tim Knepper is the editor of the new book, A Spectrum of Faith, Religions of the World in America's Heartland. It takes us inside 15 different faith communities in central Iowa. The pictures, beautiful pictures in the book, are provided by Bob Blanchard. Bob, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
And the book is a production of Drake Community Press. Carol Spalding-Cruzy is professor of English and director of Drake Community Press. Carol, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
And we can't wait to see what your next project is.
Thanks.
More than 100 Drake students were involved in producing this book. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.